This is the fan noise setup. So we are exploring how memory affects the quality of our lives. I've been in a little experiment trying to focus a lot less on remembering how bad my tennis playing is as the weeks go by in the summer. This week was tough, though, because I hit a lot of balls in the net. One overhead came, and I totally missed it. But it's good to joke around about these things, but we know that memory involves some really serious stuff. So I want to clearly recognize that for some folks, memory is a difficult topic. The main character in Lisa Genova's novel, Still Alice, is a bright, impressive Harvard professor who has been diagnosed at age 50 with early onset Alzheimer's. And she gets lost after her run that she's been doing in her neighborhood for years. After preparing all day in the office for a business trip, Alice forgets to go to the airport. And that evening, she walks through the door in her Boston home, and her husband says, "Aren't you supposed to be in Chicago?" Alice forgets the recipe for her famous white chocolate bread pudding that she's been making by memory for decades for family gatherings, and she just sits in the kitchen looking at the eggs, and she does not know what to do. Alice forgets that both her mother and sister have died, and she keeps thinking that they're about to walk through the door. They should be here any minute. Where are they? Experts say this novel is an astutely accurate and educational portrayal of the realities of memory breaking down with Alzheimer's. A medical expert herself, Ms. Genova, the author, says she wrote the book to demonstrate how folks with Alzheimer's stand on ground that is constantly shifting beneath their feet. Familiar symptoms get worse, new symptoms develop. This can be frustrating, exhausting, and demoralizing. And she says, "I think the most common struggle, though, that I see people face is alienation and loneliness. I myself have never experienced alienation or loneliness anywhere near that level. And as I count my blessings, as I hope most of us do who don't struggle with that, I'm able to say that at times in my life, I have truly struggled with a poor memory, really connected to the fact that I suffered from clinical depression for a number of years that was related to my alcoholism. And when an alcoholic is drinking with depression, memory can crash. That's what happened with my long and short-term memories. For 2 to 3 years in my life, it was really bad. And during that blue period, an example is a friend asked me if I had had a happy childhood. And whatever the context, that question just bowled me over because for the life of me, I could not remember. I did not know the answer one way or another, and it was weeks. I was talking to my mom and my dad trying to see what they thought to put it back together. Depression constituted a wall that prevented me from looking backwards in my life. And as we know and as we're really concerned about in our living as a human family, many illnesses and traumas that people have experienced can make memory extraordinarily difficult for a variety of reasons. So we really honor that this month in our memory theme. And just to say, so it doesn't have to be a big illness or a trauma. Sometimes just by running too fast, which many of us do, we can reduce our capacity to remember well. Sometimes there are just blank spots in our past where we don't really relate to it, and it's a little unsettling. All that being said, how wonderful it is when we can reconnect with the fact that even seemingly small things can trigger rich memories. Oren Pamuk's father's suitcase reminds Oren of his father returning from a trip, walking through the front door, wearing the unforgettable cologne. Oren Pamuk's father's suitcase reminds him of his father sitting and writing, pouring his dreams and aspirations out onto the page. Oren Pamuk's father's suitcase reminds Oren of why he himself writes. He says that he writes because he has an innate need to write. He writes because he wants to change the world. He writes because he's afraid of being forgotten. And as most of us can, it resonates with most of us, Oren says, at times the purpose of his writing fades from his consciousness, but this suitcase brings it back to center. His father gave him the gift of this purpose of life. Diane Ackerman wrote a book called A Natural History of the Senses. A Natural History of the Senses is a book where she says, nothing is more memorable than a smell. I say, yeah, good or bad, it can be really memorable. One scent can be unexpected, momentary, and fleeting, and yet conjure up a childhood summer beside a lake in the mountains, or a family dinner, a pot roast and sweet potatoes, a dinner that really mattered to you. And one delicate engagement of any of the senses, she says, a complex vision can leap from the undergrowth of our consciousness. Undergrowth of your consciousness can hold a vision that can leap forward, something that can just help you feel more alive than ever. It is so true that the benefits of memory are tangible. So that's why we have to practice. This month, our small group ministries have three spiritual practices, which I invite you to do yourselves. The first one is simple but important. Reconnect with your earliest memory. What is your earliest memory? This does not have to be profound. This is sort of just to get you going with the practice. In our small groups, we've been remembering the birth of a sibling or a miscarriage that our mother had. Somebody remembered chasing the ice cream truck for those dreamsicle push-ups. Remember the orange push-up? That was somebody's first memory. Somebody else remembered getting her tonsils taken out. The second exercise is to figure out what memento needs to return to the center of your life. Memento. Last time I preached on this topic, I was calling it momento. Memento. The ones we're looking at sometimes remind us of people who meant something to us, a photograph of a favorite grandmother, our parents long ago, a family gathering in the park. Mine right here, I wish I could put it up on a screen, is an Incan stone sculpture from Machu Picchu region of Peru. And Kristen and I got this together at a time when we were realizing that we wanted to spend our lives together. It's a man and a woman together. So this has been on my dresser for years, and I'm just claiming it more intentionally and mindfully, paying more attention to it as part of my doing the spiritual exercise. The third spiritual exercise is to pass on a memory that matters. This one is great. In the novel, Alice has Alzheimer's, and her daughter Lydia makes a video for her mother, trying to help her hold on just a little bit more to these memories that they know are going to go. It contains people sledding in the snow, raking leaves, singing happy birthday with kooky hats and blowing out the candle. You may want to, in order to do this one, pass on a memory that matters. Tell your grandchildren a precious memory about their parents, a memory they might not know about. You might want to tell a dear friend of yours a memory you have about her when she showed you how you can talk to her about anything, that she's there for you. Remember that time when I was really struggling and we sat on that picnic bench for like an hour and just talked? That memory is so important to me, and I just want you to know that. Let us build memories in our friends and family. Let us build memories in our church and in our world. We need to practice these things because the benefits of memory can be great, and remembering is harder than one might think. One study I read indicates that humans remember with less accuracy than many people would assume. For example, when thinking about childhood memories, studies show that many people are susceptible to believing that a story they heard about themselves is true, even when it is not. But a lot of people have these, like, you're just not sure. Did we really all sit around grandmother in the hospital in her sickbed that time, eating soup and telling jokes? Or is that just something somebody kind of made up? Pat Murphy and Paul Doherty are two memory researchers who wrote that people tend to think of memory as being a tape recorder or a camera capturing all of what's out there. But that does not match with the current thinking of most memory researchers. Their research implies that your memory of an event is something you construct. You construct from bits and pieces of what you saw and heard and experienced and what you felt at that time. What was your mood when it happened is going to affect how you remember it. The things people told you afterward, suggestions, thoughts, implications, all filtered by your attitude and by who you are. So there's a lot of factors. Which bit and piece do you keep from an event? How do you process what you thought and felt at the time? How does your attitude and who you are affect your memory? All of these are truly important questions, I am convinced, because there is so much to lose and there is so much to gain. Each and every day we have decisions to make about how we organize our memories. Here's an example of a person I really look up to, who has had to face serious choices about how and what to remember in his life. Now in his 30s, Eboo Patel grew up in Chicago, and he wrote a great book, highly recommend this book, Acts of Faith, The Story of an American Muslim, The Struggle for the Soul of a Generation. You can look at Patel is the author of Acts of Faith. Placing a high value on the importance of interfaith efforts, the book shares memories from Eboo's life, including the following two stories. Eboo says that he grew up as an American Muslim from India. That's how he describes himself. And he grew up in a predominantly white suburb of Chicago. And he was one of the only kids of color in his gym class. Sadly, in the locker room, a number of the white classmates pushed him around, smacked him with wet towels, and called him racist names. When he went home after school, he could not bring himself to tell his mother about these troubles, including the fact that a lot of times he ended the experience slumped in the corner of the locker room crying. It is also true that in junior high, Eboo was becoming a very good student. He wanted to declare. He decided, I'm going to declare that I'm going to do no extracurricular activities after school because I'm going to dedicate myself to exclusively becoming a most excellent student. And he was really excited to tell his parents this. And he was very surprised by their reaction because they said, no, Eboo, no, that is not a good idea. His parents explained that the Muslim faith discouraged such insularity. In order to be a good Muslim, yes, one must study, read, and think. But it's also very important to be of service to the broader community. And you have to have a balance, they told him. So, family agreed. Ibu would get involved in the local YMCA, which that chapter showed a very strong love of kids from all backgrounds. Ibu quickly became thrilled. He was part of the YMCA youth leadership team. And in that program, the youth sang songs. And he loved them. He dug the songs, and he started singing them himself everywhere he went, including around the house. Some of them had Christian overtones. And Ibu says, at one point, his father was feeling especially defensive of and perhaps righteous about his Muslimness. And Ibu overheard his father asking his mother, "Do you think they're trying to teach Christianity to our kids?" "I hope so," she said. "I hope they're teaching the kids Jewish and Hindu songs as well, because that's the kind of education we want our Muslim children to get." As he grew older, Ibu says he decided which memory to claim and proclaim as a guiding light in the living of his life. He says he could, these are his words, he could have stayed bitter and angry about the racism. He could have allowed hatred to fester and guide him. Note, he is not saying he forgot the bad. He's just saying he chose not to focus on it. He chose to choose the memory of his mother encouraging interfaith sharing and respect. And this has become a guiding light. This is the overall arc of his life. He's deeply involved in this. Forest Church says that with practice, we can organize our memories in ways that prove most conducive to balance, reconciliation, and hope. With practice, we can organize our memories in ways that prove most conducive to balance, reconciliation, and hope. Hold on to that one, folks. I am blessed that I've had wonderful healing from my depression and my alcoholism. I have gotten and continue to get help from a lot of people. And with all of that, I have been able to remember very clearly that I did have lots of happiness in my childhood. Reading Ibu's stuff made me remember. I loved music so much as a child, and one of my favorite songs was "When the Saints Come Marching In." And I used to sing this out loud walking to school by myself. And I would get down on my knee at the big parts and sing out loud. I was like, I must have been kind of happy as a kid if I was down on my knee on the block singing "When the Saints Come Marching." And then I'd come home for lunch and dance to Michael Jackson off the wall by myself in the living room. So I must have been kind of happy. And those are important memories for me as well as my tough times. Who we are is shaped not as much by a full accumulation of all the events of our lives as it is by the highlighting of key moments in our memories. We all have experiences of suffering and joy. We are all human beings, so I know that this is true. We all have the good, the bad, and the ugly in different shapes and forms in our experience. It takes practice, and in many cases work, and in many cases help, to remember in a way that gives balance, reconciliation, and hope. We can mark certain memories from long ago or things as they happen and say, this is so sacred that I'm going to put this in a special place in my heart. This one I'm going to claim and proclaim. I'm not going to forget this one. Makes me think of a couple who were so scared. Their daughter fell down this big flight of stairs. They didn't know if she was okay. They were trembling and crying. And when the fear subsided a little bit, they looked in each other's eyes, and the wife said, "I love you so much." And they had not said that to each other enough or with enough heart for a long time. And it's the memory of saying, "I love you," the declaration of love, that's a key memory for that couple and their marriage. how you remember can help or hinder you in achieving your life's purpose. Are your memories bolstering love, courage, and hope? Or are your memories bolstering jealousy, fear, or despair? Which memory does your church need from you right now? Is it the time maybe when you realized in here, you know what, this is a church, I don't have to check my brain at the door. In this place, I can actually believe what I believe and be who I am and share my gifts and not pretend that I believe some creed that I never believed. Is it a memory about somebody suffering or you suffering that makes you believe that we as a church community should work for a world where everybody gets the best care possible, everybody with memory problems due to illness or trauma? Is it a memory where you yourself started to learn something and come on fire to be a student that helps you realize that our church absolutely should be prioritizing education justice as we are? Share your memory of learning. Which memory will allow you to be more comfortable in your own skin? Is it the time you were in the clothing store and the sales clerk was trying to kind of get you to buy something that you didn't really groove on, and you realize, you know what? Most of the time, I'm the one who knows what makes my soul happy to wear. I'm the one who knows who I am. Was it Anderson Cooper publicly stating that he's homosexual? A lot of us were like, yeah. And? But even I love Anderson. But even though in some ways it was a non-news event, it was not a non-news event, because this can be a guiding light of memory for anybody, including gay, lesbian, transgender, or bisexual people who needed that. That's a memory. This guy said it in front of tens of millions of viewers. I can be okay with myself, and I can love who I want. Which memory was it that helped you realize again that none of us will outlive racism and that we'll all have to do our best until we die, knowing we won't win the fight? Was it when Trayvon Martin was shot wearing the hoodie that you remembered again, nope, I can't take a back seat? Which memory will help you celebrate that love is the most powerful force in the universe? Was it the time you saw somebody jump in the lake and save that little girl that he didn't even know, putting himself at risk, a total stranger? Imagine, what would happen in our beloved community if we all grew to more intentionally remember in ways that promote compassion, respect, and empowerment? Blessings be. Amen.